During a hastily scheduled event at the White House on Monday, President Trump directly condemned white supremacists and neo-Nazis in a brief statement to reporters, saying, quote, racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans, adding, those who spread violence in the name of bigotry strike at the very core of America, but they'll always have a home in my administration. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
There's something that one was a mouthful. A lot of mouthfuls this week. Welcome to Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ, joined as always by Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia.
Hello.
And semi-regular, but always a special guest,
hello,
Drexel Hurd at Drexel Hurd. And don't forget to follow the show at Trump Report ABTV. If you're watching us live on YouTube right now, jump into the chat. Let us know what you have to say on what is obviously, we were joking on social media, a very slow news week. It's a little bit of a struggle to figure out what we're going to talk about, but we soldier on. Where do we start?
Well, infrastructure.
As I referenced in the opening of the show, Monday was a almost normal day. President Trump, he belatedly, but he still did the right thing. He condemned the Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, white supremacists. He called them out by name. And it really seemed like, okay, it's a small step, but it's at least a step in the right direction. A little late, but okay. Obviously somebody talked some sense into him. And then there was today when President Trump reiterated his comments from over the weekend where he said there were, quote, many sides to blame for what happened in Charlottesville. Although today I think there's only two sides. So on Saturday there were many sides. Now there's only two sides. So that would be a tremendous step backwards in case you're keeping score at home. And I wanted to start with Chelsea. Give us your thoughts as this story unfolded. First, in terms of the events in Charlottesville, President Trump's reaction, or I guess we should say non-reaction, reaction, re-reaction.
Okay, will do. All right, let's see if I can remember all that. First, what to say about it is tragic and horrible and horrifying. And I think the thing that should be talked about over and over, harped on, even extremely to the extent that it's almost obnoxious, is the fact that this was an act of domestic terrorism. And I think we need to move money away from military abroad and bring it home to keep the peace and enforce the laws around here.
Or find more money and also put just as much money on home, because obviously there's some concerns abroad.
I had a friend who was in the Navy, and he said on one training exercise, he flew, I don't know, I'm really unfamiliar. He had to dump a whole tank of gas.
Yeah.
And it cost $100,000.
I have a friend who's a Marine aviator. I've heard similar stories to that.
And then he saw a report on the waste in Afghanistan. Like, we send these huge trucks over there, but then they get a popped tire and they don't send them the tire. They don't have another. So the whole thing gets thrown out and they order a new truck.
I don't know if that's as much about being abroad in Afghanistan or if that's just the way that the government does something. If a truck gets a flat tire, you throw it away and get a new one.
But it's just wasteful. So that means that we can take that wasted money and bring it home and address the domestic terrorism problems, because we've been putting a lot into the military because of terrorism, or that's at least what I hear from people, that they're, aside from the economy, they're most worried about terrorism. And I assume that they're meaning a terrorism that comes from abroad. And now I think people should be just as, if not more, concerned about domestic terrorism. So that's my spiel on the terrorism.
No, which is, and domestic terrorism is a term that we've heard in the last, 72 hours, but not as much, and certainly not from the White House. We can revisit that, but I wanted to give Drexel a chance to chime in. We were texting about this earlier this afternoon, and I said that, yesterday's press conference, basically what I just said, was like, all right, too little too late. Well, but at least he's saying the right thing. But then today's press conference, it was basically like, to keep it semi-light around here, because that's what we do, it's basically like in Wayne's World, where you say something, and then you follow it up with not. So right. Today was a not press conference. It was like, you know what I said yesterday? Yeah, that didn't count. And
you guys, look at, we're having a moment right here.
Storage yard resident agrees with Chelsea.
Oh,
I wish I could take I wish I could take a screen grab of that. thank you, Jimbo. And the interesting thing, and I'll get your thoughts about the whole thing, but something that was sort of underreported, there's a photo of General Kelly off to the side while President Trump was speaking today. And it's sort of like that portrait in the White House of John F. Kennedy, where he's got his head down. It's very somber. And you could just tell he's like, well, what am I here for if this guy's going to do this and not listen to me? So, Drexel, give us your thoughts, obviously, in general. But if you'd like to start with today's press conference.
I mean, where do you start?
Putting the whole show together.
Favorite quote.
I don't have a lot of favorite quotes. First of all, this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I think we're well past people being surprised what Donald Trump does.
I agree. Although I think I shouldn't be surprised, I still am.
And Chelsea and I talked about it right before. Like, you know, we're at this point now where we have to be emotionally unattached to what right. what's happening.
But
still like be engaged in understanding what the consequences of this presidency is to American history. But I want to touch on a couple things because, first of all, I hear what Chelsea's saying. I just disagree slightly, but we'll get to that in a second.
Because you're going to tease me with that?
I am going to tease you because
stay tuned, faithful
viewer. So I think there's a couple of things that I just wanted to address first. The president talked about the alt-left today, which
Giving it credence by calling it that?
No. He used the term alt-left today. What I found interesting, what I found interesting is that he did not invoke Black Lives Matter in his statement today. However, we know that his supporters have been using that. David Duke used it again today in a tweet today where he said he actually used Black Lives Matter and Antifa in the same. On the same line in a tweet today. But what people need to understand is that Black Lives Matter is obviously not a hate group. It's certainly not a terrorist organization like neo-Nazis, like white supremacists are in this country. There is no destruction. There is no hatred towards a certain person. There is a these are lives.
Also, is there a mailing address where you could write to Black Lives Matter? I'm not even trying to be funny. Because Ku Klux Klan, I'm sure they have a PO box.
They do have
somewhere.
A PO box.
They're an organization like that. Black Lives Matter is more of like a movement.
It is a movement. Yeah. So there is not an organization. And we've talked about this on Political Culture before where, you know, we always talked about where Black Lives Matter needed a leader to be somewhat effective. But I think at this point, people are starting to recognize that the idea that Black and Brown Lives Matter are essential and something that people need to be, you know, kind of give a shit about.
Actually, that's a really good point because there are a lot of white people that are like, why don't Black Lives Matter? Everybody's lives matter. And then now those people who had no idea what was going on are like, oh,
because,
I see what you're talking about.
Because of things like Charlottesville. It's like when you have... When parents are against gay people until they have a gay son, you know, unless something's in your face, Republicans and a lot of Trump voters don't respond unless something is in their face. You can't – a lot of the things that Donald Trump has said, he talked a lot about jobs today where we know that's untrue. We know that the millions of jobs that he's created in the 6 months of his presidency is not because of the policies of this administration. It is because of the policies of the Obama administration and the consistency in which 72-plus months of job growth has happened under President Obama is continuing under this presidency, where in 6 months you have – something like 175,000 jobs being created a month, which is lower than what Barack Obama was doing 6 months into the end of his term.
Right.
So I think that's a lie, but it's not like nobody can see that. I think you can see what happened in Charlottesville. You can see what's happening around the country. You can see what's about to happen in Texas, in Boston, and at Google in Atlanta, where these people are saying, "Here's where we're going to be." They're kind of like. What's that church group?
Westboro Baptist Church.
What we saw in Charlottesville was Westboro Baptist Church times like 10.
Right. These are people that would be out protesting the Westboro Baptist Church protesting. Like, these are like, you know, I mean, the Westboro Baptist Church, which is very extreme. I mean, they were originally known as an organization, you know, God hates and a slur for homosexuals.
Right.
I mean, that's how we first heard of that church. Right. So this is further out than that.
Right. And the other part of that is, you know, Donald Trump talked today about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Like, comparing past presidents of the United States to Confederate soldiers whose goal was to tear apart the Union.
Yes.
It is crazy to me that and you saw that today with Fox News, the propaganda machine of the Trump administration. Tucker Carlson was talking all about slavery today. Why would you be talking about slavery when the president to compare presidents to slave? Not that they weren't slave owners, but you're just like you
That's
can't
not
make
the
that
weird
argument.
Angle
yeah,
to,
it's well, a weird to, angle to use
to focus on the comp. Oh, there was a message in the booth. Somebody needs to lean to their left.
Wait, I feel like I'm going to shove Drex out of the shot there.
It's all right. It's a very cozy environment we have here on the Trump Report. President Trump's comments about, you know, basically comparing George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, it made me think about it. You know, having statues to Stonewall Jackson, Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis in the United States – people who, the way that obviously we will look at it, you know, people that grew up in the North, we will look at them as traitors. But having statues to them is almost like expecting, you know, in Trafalgar Square in London, like, can you put up a statue to George Washington?
Right.
You know, because of course they won. So these are men who deserve to have statues.
But there's a way to teach history
without
glorifying. Well, teach history and to where people can understand the blemishes on American history, whether or not it's slavery, whether or not it's civil rights, whether or not it's women's rights, whether or not it's gay rights, and how it took a while for us to move forward, and not glorifying the problems that existed.
Yeah, and I heard something, and I believe me, I've consumed so much information, I forget where I heard it, but somebody had the idea of, you know, you take down these statues, maybe put them in an exhibit in a museum somewhere, and then you have it in that context, in that conversation.
Right.
I know that this issue has really kind of blown up over the last few years. This isn't the only incident. I mean, I remember what was late last year in Louisiana. There were workmen wearing masks so that people didn't know who was taking down these Confederate statues. So, Drexel, my understanding is that your background is indeed in the South. So you probably have a little bit of an understanding about this because – on the one hand, you want to say, like, okay, well, how do the people in these states feel about it? But then at the same time, a lot of those state flags and state houses would fly the Confederate flag. So where is the balance between what the people of a state want in terms of honoring their history and also the way that other people in that same state would feel, that's, you know, a very ugly time in our history, and they consider some of these things to be racist.
Well, that's good. It's interesting because somebody brought up the Vice. Vice was in Charlottesville last week, and then they did a whole, like, a couple of series or whatever. But I watched something specific today about there was this guy who sat down to dinner with a white nationalist, and it was about a 3-minute clip that I watched today.
I saw that too.
And one of the things that people don't understand in the South, first of all, you've got a group of people, and I used to talk about this as a kid. I said, you know, when I ever run for president of the United States, which, whatever.
You take the if out of that.
Yeah. I said that, you know, it would, this is, you know, back when I wasn't really thinking about, like, how government actually worked. But I was like, you know what? I would require everybody to move into different regions. Like, require Americans to shuffle themselves around, like we shuffle
abroad,
them, yeah, like we shuffle the military
internally.
Around, right, and
study domestically. When you've got a
whether or not you're from the South, whether or not you're from New York, whether or not you're from whatever region you're from, if you don't move out of that region, you don't quite understand what somebody else is going to.
No, I mean, I definitely agree with that sentiment. I mean, as somebody who moved from New York to Los Angeles 14 years ago today, by the way, it's a stark contrast, and of course, those two areas are not that different from each other. So it would be interesting if somebody moved, you know, from the Ozark Mountains to Seattle.
Right.
You know.
So I think that what those folks don't, and what I got from this guy in the Vice
video
was that he, those people are afraid of losing this, losing whiteness, losing themselves. And being the minority. White people are always afraid of being
the minority. I think because they're afraid of the karma.
Yes. They're afraid of what could happen, what's going to happen if they're a minority. They'll, not that something bad's going to happen.
They'll be treated the same way they treated all the other minorities.
And you could see that fear in the guy on the Vice video. You could see that fear in Charlottesville this weekend, that this idea of erasing history is somehow going to diminish their importance in the United States. And I think that that's what you see in how we got to Donald Trump, where you had a lot of voters who didn't really care about what he said in terms of policy. Like, these people don't care. They know he's not going to get anything done. They absolutely have to know that at this point.
I don't even think they care.
They don't even care. But he is speaking to this idea of I'm not saying anything that we don't already know. When he says American, he means white. That's what they hear. And so that's all they know.
People have certainly taken Make America Great Again.
As Make America White Again. Yeah. So I think that you, in the South, if you are not moving out of that region, that's all you know. So when it comes to Confederate flags, whether or not you're taking it out of the Alabama flag, whether or not you're taking out the South Carolina flag, Mississippi flag, yeah, those people don't want that because it is erasing how they were brought up and erasing their part of their history.
Sure. And I think that obviously in
some
no
parts
pun
of
in,
history are meant to
right,
be
right, but
in
no way do I mean this as a pun. You know, the idea of whitewashing that history is not the right approach either. I'm not saying that you're not right about the flags and the statues, but I think that people feel, you know, whether it was their great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandfather, however many greats you need to put in front of it, that fought and died on behalf of the Confederate Army, they're like, well, you know, I whether you feel like their ideals were right or wrong, they feel some sense of pride that, you know, my family served in the military for what they believed in. So I see sort of that little bit of the feeling. But then when it gets so much bigger, and a meme that I saw a lot over the weekend on Facebook and Twitter was that the Confederate flag was the ultimate participation trophy because it's a reminder of something that did not go well, you know, for the South. And obviously, I've talked to Southerners enough in my life that I know that they do have a little bit of a sense of pride. It's like, you know, it wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. Yes, part of that was slavery. And yes, these are usually white folks that say this to me. But they feel very strongly that it wasn't that cut and dry. And I don't know, it was before my time. But, you know, that's the impression that I always had. So, again, Drexel, I guess that you've kind of seen all that, but when North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper says, hey, we got to take those down, that seems like to the rest of us who are what we like to consider logical, we don't live in North Carolina, it makes sense, but that's probably not great for somebody's political longevity in that state. But in the sense that, well, he's putting this ahead of that because he thinks it's that important, it is commendable.
But I also think that when you – a good governor, and by governor I mean anybody who is in government.
Like lowercase g.
Lowercase yeah. g. Understands the – has their ear to the ground and understands that if you're not on the right side of history at some point, then you're on the wrong side of history. You know, and so – or if you're not on the right side of history at that moment, then you're on the wrong side. You're eventually going to be on the wrong side of history, and you want to jump the gun and make that decision on your watch. And I think that Roy Cooper, he said a couple things. So we saw the statue come down in Durham yesterday, and people were tearing it down. And Roy Cooper said, "Don't tear it down. We will take them down. But you should not be vandalizing property, and you should not be doing that. And we should do it the right way." Now, okay, to logical people, that makes a whole lot of sense. But I think we live in this world, this 24-hour news cycle where everything has to happen right now, right now, right now, right now. And I think it's very hard for politicians to catch up. And they need to – and Roy Cooper had to make that decision. And I don't think that – I think that when it comes to North Carolina history, you know, there are some shitty things that happened in North Carolina history. But to your point, you can put it in a museum somewhere.
Like when they excavate dinosaur bones, they don't like make a statue out of them. They put them in a museum, even though, you know, that was what's here in our land.
Right.
So this they're erasing us thing is a little BS.
But that's why I said, I think it really goes back down to people are afraid of erasing a part of the history that they thought they knew. They might not, you know, if you look in the history books in Texas, if you look in the history books in North Carolina, some of those states aren't writing the Civil War like they should probably be writing them. So that can confuse a lot of people. So they're like, well, why wouldn't you? I mean, these people were Americans, and they were part of American history. And yeah, to us, you're like, okay, I can understand that argument. If these people were not trying to destroy the country that you think is so great.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we could talk about that facet of it for the rest of the show.
I did see a good comment that I wanted to agree with. It was from R. Scott Brown. It was a little higher up. You know, commenting on the fact that the swastika is banned in Germany.
Yes.
And I was talking to a psychiatrist earlier today, not one that treats me, but just
wanted to go on record in case you run for vice president along with Drexel.
And I was asking, you know, what can be done to change their hearts and minds? And he says there isn't really anything that you can do. These are people who are acting out trauma as people do. And that what we have to do is make it that it's just not allowed to do what they're doing, to hold up what they're holding up. He said, I understand that there's a whole First Amendment argument against that. But when you look at the exceptions to the First Amendment, violence being one of them, although, you know, it's not just, you know, anything about violence. It's something, it's like inciting violence. It's like imminent violence. And I think that the argument can start to be made that this, you know, group is I think, violating the First Amendment.
I just want to point something out because somebody in the chat room said, you can take down the Confederate flag, but don't take down General Lee. I don't know if that was a sarcastic remark or not.
Or were they talking about the General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard?
I don't know.
Because that car belongs in a museum.
But my question is, that's really funny to me because General Lee basically flew under the, like, they're basically the same thing. They stand for the same thing. So if you're fine with taking down the Confederate flag, you should be fine with taking down a statue of General Lee because the Confederate flag was there to break up the Union just as much as General Lee. Like, a symbol is a lot, you know, the person elevated the symbol.
Yeah.
And that's the taking down General Lee is taking down
I think something I heard from a lot of, you know, Trump supporters after he was elected was, you know, give him a chance, which, you know, I want to know where those people are now on, did we give him a chance long enough? Did you see that it didn't work out so well? But the other part, wow, you in California live in a bubble.
Well, as we established,
I'm not from the California.
Right.
I went to college in North Carolina. I'm from the South. My dad's in the military.
And you used
I'm
to
from
be
pretty
a Republican.
Much everywhere. Yeah. So don't give me that bullshit about you live in a California bubble.
But finish your point, Chelsea.
I don't even remember it at this point.
Okay. So the point I was going to make, though, was sort of talking about the First Amendment. And one of the great things about living in America is that if neo-Nazis want to march down, Main Street in any town USA with their signs and all that, they're allowed to. It's just when it crosses beyond the, you know, marching, whatever you're commemorating or trying to prove. And what was with the tiki torches? I mean, you couldn't do better than that.
What they could afford.
Okay. But see, so here's the thing. I'm wondering if, you know, the symbol of the Confederacy and marching with torches is enough of an incitement of violence to therefore not be protected by the First Amendment. And I hope one of them was arrested and then the case is going to go all the way up to the Supreme Court. I doubt it, but, and that's the only way that we would find out is if one of the protesters was arrested.
And if people don't see the
First Amendment,
if people don't see the connection between the torches that were used this weekend and the torches that were brandished. Back in the 50s, 60s, then they're living probably under some rock, because I mean the images were parallel. And there is no mistaking. Like, I watched this one kid today. The one who the photo of the kid that was screaming, was on the news today, not on his like local news. And he was like, "Well, I was just there, and then my friends, and then I got caught up in all that." No, you didn't. We saw the photo.
Yeah.
Like, don't try to pretend like you weren't the one screaming, also, sweating, and walking, and carrying a torch around. Like, you knew why you were there.
Yeah, and you know, look, it's also not like something shameful happened. You walked by a park where Nickelback were playing, and you started singing along because you realized, oh, I kind of like those. No, you got caught up in it. Doesn't excuse you from participating in a neo-Nazi rally.
Right.
So it's an interesting sort of some of those things, because all of a sudden people started losing jobs. There were stories about, family members being disowned. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is real. And I guess all of a sudden people are like, oh, not so much white power, but white power.
Small W.
White power.
Yeah. I do want a couple of things real quick, because we talked about, military. So the Commandant of the Marine Corps tweeted today. Now, the crazy thing is that there's the Commander-in-Chief, and then there's the generals that have to listen to the Commander-in-Chief, But the Commandant of the Marine Corps tweeted out today, Robert Neller said, "There's no place for racial hatred or extremism in the United States Marine Corps. Our core values of honor, courage, and commitment frame the way Marines act and live." When you have the Commandant of the Marine Corps having to remind the troops that the President of the United States, that is not the way that the Marine Corps works, that is a problem.
That your Commander-in-Chief does not represent the values of the Marine Corps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is crazy to me. And, we just did, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the transgender ban. When we talked about blacks in the military, we talked about gays in the military, we talked about women in the military, we talked about transgendered Americans in the military, we talked about how people talked about how disruptive they were and how disruptive they could have been to unit cohesion. But there is nothing more disruptive to the United States military than the Commander-in-Chief being the disruptor. And so when you have the Commandant of the Marine Corps, and then eventually, I'm sure, the other – when you have the Coast Guard Commandant coming out and saying, sorry, we're going to continue on doing what we're doing, that should be more frightening to the American people as the president's first duty as Commander-in-Chief than anything else. And it is – as a military kid, that's a little bit scary when now you're like, well, what's the military going to do? Because now they have to figure it out. Do they follow the orders from this guy who do not share the same values as they do?
I have faith in them that they won't.
Well, I mean, they don't have a choice.
Same time, people on the other side made that argument about, well, what about soldiers who don't believe in what President Obama represents? And ultimately, when you do get an order from the Commander-in-Chief, it does have to get implemented.
However,
you want to say that when we do the nuclear showdown?
Right, but there's two arguments. First of all, the nuclear codes, that's a complicated situation, because the president can't just push the button by himself. There's Secretary of Defense. There's a couple people that it has to go through before that. So we're kind of good.
In a weird way, I feel like Cheney has to still sign off.
Oh right.
I feel like
from the bunker.
But
there's also the side. There's also the impeachment side. And I know we talk about it a lot. I don't know how
what the line is.
Right. But there's also the dereliction of duty side when it comes to being Commander in Chief. If the president is derelicting his duty to command the troops in the way that he's supposed to, that to me is an impeachable offense, because you are not doing your job. And that is something that I think Congress has to look at. And, if Republicans who are military, who have that military background, or who, like Chelsea said, who are very invested in the military, are interested in military readiness, then they're going to have to remove this president.
Well, I think that, basically add that to the list of reasons people are putting out there. What obviously, President Trump was you know, the reaction to his comments today about the both sides in Charlottesville got reactions that included an abomination, shocking, and racist. But I do want to talk about what he's referring to, and we touched on it earlier in the show. When he's saying both sides, what he's talking about, and part of that is this sort of anti-protester group, and again, this Antifa is also not someone who has a mailing address. It's just sort of a loose cohesion of different groups, but when they show up, things do tend to get violent. And Drexel, you weren't here, but if Chelsea, if you remember, when we had our friends from based in LA, Jeffrey Mark Klein was talking about when they were up at Stanford. That's basically who was there, and it sort of turned a little extra violent there. So the idea that both sides are to blame is, for me personally, anyone can feel whatever way they want, that's crazy. But when you have somebody show up who is basically a shit disturber and they do tend to resort to violence, that's not going to help. I think that this situation was already out of control. But go ahead.
I was just going to say, this reminds me of when I was a kid and my sister and I, we never got along. And what would happen is that I think she might like kick me under the table. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I would kick her back and she, ow, you know, like this big, huge reaction.
Right.
So and then my parents would just say, stop fighting. I don't care who's
because it's your fault,
that
Chelsea.
That didn't help the situation.
It's true.
Both of you are to blame. OK, maybe. But you're not really looking at the situation and addressing it. And I thought something really interesting that David Gergen, of all people, said, you know, if Trump is going to be, you know, loving and bring peace and unity to this country, he's got to deal with the hatred in his own heart first.
It's an interesting observation, for sure.
Right.
You don't think that's going to happen, is that?
Well, I don't know. Look, even the Grinch's heart grew three sizes that one day. So I don't want to rule out anything. But to sort of get back to this violent response, it's hard to figure out what else ought to have happened because, by accounts from both sides of this, they both have criticized the Charlottesville police, the Virginia State Police, for basically standing on the sidelines as violence erupted. And I feel like when we've seen Black Lives Matter-related protests and things, the cops don't stand on the side. So I'm not quite sure what this was and why. The most surprising thing about this was that the police didn't get involved until it was declared, I'm using quotes, an unlawful assembly by Governor Terry McAuliffe. And you hear that name and you go, all right, but isn't this a guy who has his ties to the Clinton administration? Wouldn't you think he would handle this sort of thing better? You know, there's a word that people use a lot that I don't throw around much because I always feel like I'm going to misuse it. But wouldn't he strike you as a guy who is, as they say, woke? But instead, he's like, well, no, just let them go. So that was probably the most surprising thing was obviously, there's so many surprising things. But in the moment, you're like, well, why are the police not getting involved? And there could definitely be great reasons why. Maybe it's just as simple as the governor's like, whoa, hold off. So,
you know, everybody would be up in arms if they weren't free to express their First Amendment rights, right. And the government is stopping them from expressing their speech.
Sure.
Definitely a lose-lose for the governor.
Yes.
Like, I don't think there is any – his actual speech response was great, you know, because I'm sure at some point he's, you know, thinking about running for president. But I think that for a governor like that in a state like Virginia – after everything that the police has gone through over the past few years,
yeah.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. Not that I'm
sure.
I think that
absolutely.
I'm sure there could have been a better response to what was happening. I mean, it seemed like they were just like, well, let all the white people kill each other, and then that's what you could do. But I think that maybe the governor said, we don't want a repeat of what's been happening in the other cities. Let people do what they're going to do, and then if it gets too crazy, then do that, and then we'll have to step in. And maybe that's what the governor said to them. But to outsiders looking in, to people who have watched Ferguson, to people who have watched other cities, kind of Baltimore and things happen, it's a little shocking that the police did not respond in the way that they have been in the past.
They have definitely been responsive.
And so, you know, it's a, like I said, it's lose-lose. And like Chelsea said, it's one of those things that you're like, you can go in and see what happens, and then you're going to get blamed for it either way.
In the chat, either Nick Y or Nikki, I'm not quite sure, but welcome, by the way. I don't think I've seen you here before. McAuliffe declared an emergency after the local emergency was declared. It was not an unlawful assembly until it was an unlawful assembly. So that's a little bit of an explanation there. Right. As I was putting my notes and my thoughts together about all of this, I think one of the hugest part of the problem here is that this is a very difficult issue to navigate. You need a very strong leader. You have to have a skilled orator to not stir things up.
Right.
But we don't have either of those. And it reminded me of the line from Cool Hand Luke, also in the Guns N' Roses song Civil War. What we've got here is a failure to communicate. And President Trump is not really the guy to be out in front of this.
I mean, the real hero here would have had all the guys with torches arrested, because that's inciting and threatening violence, and then let that case go up so that we can once and for all find out if this is protected speech.
Right. Yes. I think that there's the other part of that. We just have to be very realistic with the fact that I mean, the president said he came out today and said, you know, he wanted to get all the facts, which we know that's not true.
Oh, that was hilarious.
I mean, it's crazy to me that this president said, I was just waiting on all the facts.
Were you? I like facts.
Well, I think that the problem was that, the Fox News morning show didn't cover it on the weekend. So he needed the Monday morning.
Got it.
Fox and Friends. He needed the Monday morning Fox and Friends.
Because somebody in the chat just said that Donald Trump was a strong leader. Like, there's been no policy that the Trump administration has put forth that has strengthened the United States.
I mean, I guess the question is in what way?
In what way? But the other part of that is, if he is a strong leader in strengthening white supremacy in the United States, if that is a way that you think that Donald Trump, you think Donald Trump is a strong leader, then you're absolutely right. Donald Trump is a strong leader. Donald Trump, and I said this before, last year we were doing Trump versus Hillary, and I remember having this conversation about whether or not we thought Donald Trump was racist. And I remember saying, I don't think Donald Trump is racist, a few times. And then today I'm watching this guy give this press conference, and I'm like, this Donald Trump guy is a racist.
Is it that, or is it more, well, some of my best friends are racists? You know, is he racist adjacent, or you feel
racist? I think that, you know, over time, here's the thing. At first I was like, well, Donald Trump is so stupid that he might just not know any better. But then you start to see over time, from from the way that he handled his hotels, to the Indian reservations, to his first speech out the gate when he was started to run for president, to how he's now dealt with this situation. Donald Trump does not care about minorities in the country because those are not the people that he was speaking to during the entire campaign. Because if he did, then he would have come out. General Kelly and the staff probably would have had a better speech. Steve Bannon would be gone. Steve Miller would be gone. Steve Miller would have never gave that press conference that he gave 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Had Donald Trump not been a racist. If you are fostering NAACP, tweeted the other day, you can't, they said something like, you can't be against white supremacy if you've got that if it's a part of your staff or whatever. And if you're surrounded by that, then you are what you lead.
I wanted to sort of touch on the bigger picture before we ran out of time. And obviously, as something that we've seen a lot, social media, we've heard people talk about it, there's this sort of underlying theme that what this all comes down to is that America is a racist country. And it's very easy for me, a guy in his early 40s, white guy sitting here in this fancy studio, and I can say America is not a racist country. I'm not saying that. I choose not to believe that it is entirely a racist country, but rather, to me, a country that has a number of racist people who can sometimes be very loud, but of course a very long, terrible history of racism. I'm not trying to dispute that. I just don't want to believe it, and maybe I'm being naive, sort of like you were saying, the idea that, no, Donald Trump's not racist. I am still of the frame of mind that maybe he's just too stupid, more than anything else. But I just like to think that it's a country that is trying to do better, but, you know, they could try a little harder, you know. But it's also kind of contingent to reacting to events like this. And what I saw a lot was saying that white people need to look in the mirror and realize that they're racist. Their families and friends are racist. And
I find that
characterization to be racist. To say that you see all those white people there, well, that shows us that white people are racist. I'm like, well, you're completely missing the point, you know? And I'm not saying that there aren't racists. I'm not saying that these people weren't racist. I'm not saying any of that. But just the idea is like, why are you painting white people with this brush that you would also not want to be painted with?
You know what Oprah said?
I don't know what Oprah
said. She said, when you know better, you do better. Actually, I think that was a Yama Vincent. But still, nope, maybe it was Maya Angelou. There was somebody black. But
imagine if I had said that. You know, somebody like Pam Grier, maybe.
But when you know better, you do better. To your point.
Words. I just don't know
to your
said
point.
First.
But somebody in the chat room asked if we are all liberal panel. We do. At least I don't. And if and I'm sure Chelsea does not. Make it. It's no secret. Our affiliation and our liberal background. So if you have a problem with that, you should probably go over to Fox News or hang out when Stephen Helmkamp comes back. But
right. Where is that guy?
He's been watching An Inconvenient Sequel on loop for a few weeks.
Oh, I saw that this weekend.
And you know, obviously that is always one of the knocks on this show is that we don't have a conservative voice. We try to. And sometimes I invite people on the show that I think are going to have a conservative voice. And then I realize, like, oh, they hate Trump so much
but
they're just going to agree with everything. That happened very recently.
And I think people forget the difference between, like, I'm a pretty moderate Democrat. I mean, if you watch Political Culture, it's coming back in a couple weeks.
Say the day. Come on, get the plug out there.
Which is coming back on September 5th.
Tuesday, September 5th. It'll be right before this show. It'll be at 6 o'clock Pacific.
It's the Tuesday news night.
The power.
I was going to say power hour, but it's two hours.
Yeah.
That we can have a conversation on policy. Like I said, Chelsea brought up something this morning, about the military funds. Obviously, it's something that I disagree with. However, we can have those conversations about policy and be somewhat moderately conservative in certain policies. When it comes to Donald Trump, he is neither a Republican nor is he a conservative. Donald Trump is, for all intents and purposes, I couldn't tell you what he is.
But I think that you're probably giving the Republicans a little bit too much credit by not allowing Trump to
be They absolutely own him. What I'm saying is that for a traditional Republican, that is not Donald Trump. For a traditional conservative, we want to have conversations about policies. That is not
Trump is a new
Donald
Republican.
Trump. Yes.
And so if you vote Republican,
you're voting
Trump-esque-ness.
Yes. But if you're watching this show, if we're talking about the shit that Donald Trump's doing every day or the press conference that he's having today or calling people fake news or not being able to listen to the people on the ground next to him that are trying to do their jobs in running the country,
then yes, we can.
That's what you're going to get from us. We are not anti-Republican. We are not anti-conservative. We just disagree with their policies. We are, however, anti-Trump, and that is something that people are just going to have to deal with.
Can we change the name of the show to the Anti-Trump Report?
Because the whole point is that you're reporting on Trump.
Oh.
And look, the approach that I had to this show was very different because I never imagined what these last 7 months would have been like. I felt like, all right, well, let's see how it goes. The guy won, and right away people were like, well, did he really? Yeah, he became president, and then let's see what he does. But you were saying earlier, Drexel, that you're not surprised. I think I can't be surprised by him. And every show I do of this show – Tuesdays at 7 Pacific on AfterBuzz TV. Thank you. I am usually surprised about something. I'm like, I can't believe that this happened.
But
today is so much further beyond anything that had come before. I was like, you know, I felt yesterday when he made the speech, like I said, it was like, you know, it's not entirely too little too late. It's definitely too late. But okay, it's a step in the right direction. He's getting some sense. And I thought I knew what this show was going to be like. And then that was this afternoon. That wasn't even that was late in the day. I was like, all right, well, there went everything I was expecting to talk about today. So it's very hard to be rational assess the Trump administration.
In a normal presidency, we would have been talking about Donald Trump's infrastructure idea today. I can't even call it a plan because he never has a plan for anything.
But he has the best plans.
We would
plans.
Be talking about that. We would be talking about how Elaine Chao is like ball and chain right now because she can't do anything because she's got Mitch McConnell. Like, Mitch McConnell is kind of ball and chain because he can't really do anything. Mitch McConnell barely said anything. Paul Ryan, where are these people? Where's the vice president? Vice president is in Latin America. He is so far away from what's happening right now. He's like, I'm just going to let
Which
this
It's something that didn't get much coverage, by the way. Mike Pence came out very strongly against the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis. Right. He came out very strongly
against
that.
But they're not listening to Mike Pence.
No, but before Trump said anything, it was like, I think that that was one of the approaches, was like, let Pence take care of this.
Melania... the FLOTUS Twitter account had a stronger tweet statement.
Did Ivanka.
So did Ivanka. Then the President of the United States.
I think Jared Kushner.
Right.
I'm pretty sure Barron actually very strongly, and I know we're not supposed to joke about him. I'm not really
He probably.
I think he very strongly condemned it.
But, even Steve Bannon. Even Steve,
right.
Well, okay. No, that's what
But here's the thing. Here's why I say I'm not surprised. And, you know, this is not a rehashment of, you know, Hillary versus Trump. However, Hillary Clinton did a whole 45-minute speech on where we are today, about where we look at Donald Trump right now. Barack Obama had a whole speech about where we are. Michelle Obama did an impassioned plea to the American people to remind them of what Donald Trump is and who he would be as president. She said in her speech, the presidency doesn't change you. It shows us who you actually are. And today we were reminded of who the president of the United States actually is, which is why I go back to the generals on the ground and say the generals are having to do their job and they're having to protect the country in the way that they know by slowly reminding the troops that this is not the way to do things.
We are almost out of time and we touched on it very briefly. So in our final minute here, really, let's talk about something completely different, but it's a reaction to this. And, you know, today, President Trump, he ripped into the business leaders who resigned from his White House jobs panel. Now, this isn't like a cabinet post. It's sort of more an informal greeting, gathering, whatever you want to call it, and just people who were supposed to talk to him about jobs. But it was interesting because as soon as they resigned, he said they're not taking their jobs seriously as it pertains to this country. So I was going to give credit to everyone who resigned. Merck, Under Armour, AFL-CIO, which was surprising that they were there. And Walmart sort of half-heartedly were like, well, we didn't like what he said, but we're Walmart, so we're gonna stick around a little bit longer. And I think that that probably is the sort of thing that's – as terrible as it is, the way that race was mishandled over the last 72 hours, the fact that where he's supposed to be doing the best, jobs, the economy, those are the people that are supposed to like this guy and be glad that he's there. The fact that they're like, no.
Right.
I think that that should be more telling. I don't think it'll change anything he does. He's still on his working vacation, right? I mean, I think because he's in New York
right now.
Yeah,
right.
He's happy to
Which
be
I
back.
Which I just passed down. I passed Trump Tower when I was in New York last week, and I was like,
oh, it's a good God. Thing he wasn't there because it would have slowed you down by probably like 45 minutes.
Right.
So, you know, he's not even working, and this is all going on.
Right.
So, I don't know. I wanted to give you each a chance to sort of have a final, you know, 30 seconds or so, Chelsea. As you heard the news about the CEO. CEOs, obviously, it doesn't necessarily have to be surprising, but what do you think it signifies?
Hopefully, it signifies to the American public that CEOs, the people that Trump says are the job makers of this country, which most of us know are they're not, in fact, the job makers, that small businesses are the job creators of America and not big business. But when those CEOs no longer want to have anything to do with him, that should say something to the public about this big business's faith in this man. Because if there was, I think that these, all of them were men, except like the Pepsi leader, they're all men, that these men probably thought, look, this is so despicable, and what we're saying has no influence over him, I'm out. If they felt that they actually had some influence over the economy and his decisions, they probably would have stayed and come out with some statement such as, we, you know, condemn these actions, but at the same time, we're here to help with a different part of government, and we can offer, you know, our service and experience to improve the economy. And so for the American people, we're going to stay. But because they haven't done that, I think that they all feel like, I don't want to be associated with him. I can't make a difference, because I did know somebody, or actually I'm hearing this secondhand, of a doctor who was on the transition team. And I think was asked to stick around, but then just didn't because Trump didn't listen to him or anybody else.
Interesting. Drexel, sort of to tie it all together.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say that there's two things. I agree with Chelsea on that. I also agree that businesses are terrified of the backlash that they would get if their CEOs did not resign.
The
backlash would be crazy.
Under Armour was definitely facing protests.
Right. And so. I also think that it's not just CEOs, it's the AFL-CIO. Like their leader resigned today. So I don't think that Donald Trump, again, like I said before, has had no effect on the economy, has had no effect on job creation, and these guys are starting to see that. Any deal that Donald Trump has touted, whether or not it's bringing jobs to Illinois, whether or not it's any of the manufacturing jobs that he has touted, has not been because of what Donald Trump has done. It is because of something that Barack Obama has put in place, and that has been is just now come to fruition.
Or so he did save any jobs. It was many fewer than
he
put out.
But on the other side of that, somebody brought up North Korea because North Korea they've been backpedaling on attacking Guam next month. However, I just want to point out that somebody tried to give Donald Trump credit for that in the chat room, and I'm like, no, Benjamin Slade, whatever your name is, you do not give Donald Trump credit for that, because it was China that imposed so many tariff. Import and export things on them in the past few days that put the pressure on North Korea to back out of that. This has nothing to do with Donald Trump's threats. It has everything to do with the fact that North Korea's ally, China, next door, said, hang tight, don't do anything stupid, but right now we're going to withhold a few things just so you could bring it back.
Pat myself on the back. That's exactly what I said last week, that China is never going to let anything like that happen.
Never,
anyway,
ever.
We are out of time, and we will unfortunately probably have to talk about North Korea more next week. But thank you so much to everybody in the chat. There was a great conversation going on in there, and we really didn't have as much time to read them. Tweet at us, at Trump Report ABTV, and if you're watching this after the fact, leave us a comment. We'll read them next week. Thank you so much to everyone, and thank you to Drexel Hurd, at Drexel Hurd, Chelsea Galicia, at Chelsea Galicia. I somehow merged your names together. And we will see you next Tuesday, August 22nd. My 8th wedding anniversary. Why does every time I do this show seem to be like my son's birthday? Anyway, we will see you at 7 o'clock Pacific time right here. Thanks, everyone.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.